The man after God's own heart makes a series of terrible decisions. Join us as together we see the danger that sin is to our lives next on The Balanced Word.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hand, and the instrument I play, wake up my voice, let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
There are a couple of events in David's life that would seem to stand out above all others. Perhaps because we've heard them over and over again in Sunday school, from our pastors in the pulpit. The slaying of Goliath is one, and certainly the fall into adultery and murder would be another. We'll look at the latter today on The Balanced Word, and seek to learn from David's mistakes, so we don't go down the same destructive path. We've seen many triumphs and successes in David's life, and now, like many of us, he makes a series of poor decisions. Let's see what we can learn from it. Here's Pastor Dave Rolfe in 2 Samuel chapter 11.
Well, now if you have your Bibles, turn to 2 Samuel chapter 11. 2 Samuel 11. As most of you know, this year we are going through the Old Testament and hitting some key Bible stories and just reading, thinking, reflecting on what happened in the Old Testament and what it has to say for us today. Today, we will be looking at a story that most of you perhaps are familiar with. It's the story of David, the king, the greatest king of Israel, the greatest king of all times other than Jesus, who, out of nowhere, it seems like, he has an affair with a married woman, then has her husband killed, and it's like, where did this come from? This is King David. This is the guy who is a man after God's heart. And whenever we reflect on this story, sometimes it's puzzling for us because, frankly, we always thought David was a good guy, and now he does something that we would say, no, if you murder someone and take their wife, that's probably not very good. You're probably not a good guy. But David was a good guy, and he had a good heart, and his heart never changed. And it's so important for us to understand that people who are really good, who have really good hearts, sometimes do things that are incredibly self-destructive. Sometimes do things that have awful ramifications even. But don't think, as often we do, that when you hear someone that you thought was good who did something bad, don't just go, wow, I always thought they were good. I had no idea they had that in them. We all have all kinds of stuff in us. And really good people can do really bad things. And if we just have this simplistic understanding, this is, well, I'm good, so I'll never do this, then we're setting ourselves up for hurt and failure. So we really want to, as we look at this story, I want to challenge you to get inside David's head a little bit. And to think, okay, what was life like for him at this point? How did he get to the point where this could happen to him? I really want to look at this story in a way that informs all of us and hopefully maybe protects us from the kind of self-destructiveness that is often characteristic of a life that ends up on the rocks. So let's talk about David at this point in his life before we go through the story. Okay, what do we know about David? Well, at this point in his life, he was at the pinnacle of success professionally. He had become the king. He had been the king now for quite some time, 20 years or so. He had pretty much won almost all the battles, defeated most of the enemies. At this point in his life, Israel had finally become just about the best that it would ever become. Just about a fulfillment of all of the prophecies about what God would do for his people. There were still certain areas that hadn't been conquered, and later those are going to be conquered by Jesus when he sits on David's throne. But at this point, you would look at David's life and go, wow, if I'm going to judge him professionally, he is at the peak of his game. He is just killing it, literally and figuratively. He's doing great. But at the same time, his personal life, his family life, well, that's not so good. I mean, for one thing, it's really hard to have a good, solid family when you have a bunch of wives and a bunch of extra concubines thrown in. That tends to mess things up a bit. But his kids were all a mess. Everything we read about his kids was like, oh, God, what a family. I mean, he, in just a little bit, one of his sons is going to rape one of his daughters, and then another one of his sons kills the son who raped the daughter, and then he's exiled. You think your family has problems? I mean, they were a mess. And you know what it does when things aren't right in your family. Maybe they aren't right in your family because you didn't prioritize them or whatever, but it doesn't matter. You're going, wow, I have all this success. Who do I share it with? Who do I connect with? And that's David here. Not only that, as we saw last week, David at this point realizes that the next big accomplishment for Israel, he's not going to see it. It's going to be accomplished by the ensuing generations. The building of the temple for God, God goes, awesome idea, appreciate your heart. Somebody from your seed is going to build it. And David's looking at his family and going, you're kidding me. Which of these is going to do this? But his hope is now past him. He's a bit over the hill himself, actually. Now, also, what's going on in his heart? When David was younger, he used to write psalms. He was a writer of music. He was a musician and a worship leader, and his heart was just poured out. We read in the Psalms how even from when David was really young as a shepherd, boy, he just wrote this beautiful stuff. He had this great communion with God. God was like his shepherd and loving him and taking care of him. And then even as he was going through his 20s and the king was trying to kill him, for a long time, David's still writing songs. He had this great relationship, but when you start reading the Psalms, you start realizing, wow, after winning all these victories and being at the pinnacle, he kind of quit writing. He doesn't seem to have the same intimacy with God that he once had. He still knew the voice of God. He still had a heart for God, but something was deteriorating in his relationship with God, and you pick that up as you begin to read through the Psalms and notice how many of them are about either running in the wilderness or being a shepherd. So he's got that going on. Not only that, he's getting older. By this time, he's in his 50s. Now, I don't know if 50 sounds to you like something that's scary when it's coming, or 50 looks to you like something that you're dragging a long time ago and you wish you could be in your 50s. For me, different people have different ages. For some people, when they turn 30, that's like, oh, how depressing. And if you're in your 50s or 60s and you hear people whining about being 30, it really ticks you off. But you know, for some people it's 40, for some people it's 50. For me, when I hit those milestones, they weren't a big deal because I always had friends who were older than I was. But now that most of my friends are dead, it's... It starts to feel more like, oh, I'm getting old. Now, for David especially, remember, his whole reputation was built on being the young guy. It was built on being the virile, strong, this warrior spirit, this, you know, now, like, dude, you're in your 50s. You're not who you used to be. And that had to cause him to question his masculinity. You'd think it would have caused him to feel kind of marginalized just by virtue of his age. And he was in his 50s, but it was a tough 50-some years for him for the most part. Now, not only that, I mean, his body was, I'm sure, starting to wear out. You know, being a shepherd is a rough way to make a living. Living, sleeping on rocks, living out on the hills, being kind of treated the way shepherds are treated. You got to keep moving all the time. So, well, when you get older and you've done physical labor like that, oh, and when your second career is running from the king who's trying to kill you, when you're used to singing and having spears thrown at you, your body starts to pick up aches and pains. And so David, at this point, I'm sure he was no longer dancing. We always talked about, oh, David danced before the Lord. Yeah, not at this point. You know, his dancing days were over. And his body was starting to hurt. You know, he also, at this point, they went to war without him. They were like, no, we got this one, David. You know how that feels when you start to go pick something up and somebody goes, oh, let me get it. You're like, really? I remember Pastor Romaine always saying, you know, quit treating me like an invalid because you'd, oh, be careful. But that's what they were doing. We read a little bit later on in this war against the Ammonites that they went to war without him. Joab led the armies. And then when they had this city, Ramah almost beat, then he writes to David and he goes, okay, we got him. We cut off their water supply. This deal is over. The last city of the Ammonites about to fall. So get over here and we'll let you get the win. It's, you know, that doesn't make you feel like you're useful. It's like here, it would be like if you've been a writer all your life and then people write for you and just go, I'll put your name on it. Do you really feel, I always wonder about this, who people who have all these books that they've written that they didn't even write, does that make you feel really like you've accomplished something? But that's David, he's a soldier, and yet, well, he doesn't need to be there. We got this one, it's okay. That affects the way that you look at life. But he's also surrounded by yes men. Everyone in his life works for him, and everyone in his life tells him whatever he needs to hear, and anything he asks for, he can have it. It's a part of success that ultimately you can get anything you want to get, and you can get people to tell you anything that you want them to tell you. So that's David at this point too. And friends, David doesn't have any friends. He has people who work for him. People who work for you can never be the ones to really be your friends. It usually doesn't work that way. Because their job is to encourage him, not to question him. The best friend he ever had been dead now for probably 25 years, close to that, Jonathan. And we didn't see anyone else take that place. Advisors, sure. Friends, no. And that had to be sort of lonely for him. On top of that, you add to that the whole PTSD thing. With all the war he's been through and all the trouble, some of you have experienced that post-traumatic stress from an event that happened in your life, or maybe you were away at war or whatever. It just does a number on you. Imagine with everything he had been through, it's like it affects you emotionally and psychologically. I'm not a doctor and I'm not going to diagnose him, but think about this for a moment. The character of David was that he was always on the go. You could make a real case that David was an adrenaline junkie. I mean, whenever, and by the way, an adrenaline junkie is another name for what we call today attention deficit disorder. Attention deficit disorder is not really a deficit of attention, it's a deficit of adrenaline. So people who have ADD have a tendency, they see everything, but they thrive on action. If there's a whole army of people and there's a giant going, come on, I want to fight one guy, the guy that goes, I'll take him, there's your ADD person. If you're married, and when you guys go on vacation, one of you wants to just sit in a hammock, and the other one wants to go ride jet skis, you know which one is the ADD person. But see, people who have ADD have a tendency to, you know, like, I need another thrill. It's why they're late all the time. It's not that they can't get ready. It's that they need the tension. It's why they fight with you constantly, because it raises their adrenaline enough to feel like, well, that's David. This is the way he's been doing. So he always needs something new and fresh. People like this have a tough time with relationships. It's why David, throughout his life, he's like, oh, I got the princess. I married her. Ooh, look at that girl. I'll marry her. And she's nice. I'll marry her too. I could use some more concubines. This is great. This is very typical of people who always need the new and fresh and exciting experience. But You're David now, and you've worked that out by being an incredible warrior, by being a builder, by being someone who just always has another thrill, another country to conquer, another giant to slay, another victory to do, another woman to hit on. And like now at this stage of his life, it's like, where is my next big thing? Where is my next big challenge? I need something fresh. I need something that will get my blood boiling. And it's just like at this stage, you had everything. But people like this don't do contentment well. They don't do retirement well. But here he is. They don't need him at war. He's got a nice house. God won't let him build a house for him. So what's going through his head? What's he dealing with? The more we can understand that, I think the more we can understand how good people can sometimes fall into doing really bad things. So with that, if I've painted a good enough picture of where David was at, and hopefully didn't psychoanalyze him too much, let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 11 and see what happened. 2 Samuel 11 and verse 1. It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle. It was good time of year to fight wars. David and Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon. David sent Joab. They were killing the Ammonites, the last people for them to really conquer, and they besieged Rabbah, the last stronghold of the Ammonites, but David remained at Jerusalem. This is the big battle. It's like, ooh, yeah, I used to get so pumped because we're going to battle. And now either they told him, we got this, or he was just like, I don't know. It just seems like when you've killed one Ammonite, you've killed them all. You know, it's just getting boring for me. For whatever reason, they went to war and he stayed back. Then it happened in verse 2. One evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house. He can't sleep. He's still antsy. It's like, what do I do? Stuff maybe racing through his head going, man, when I was younger, I would have been leading the armies. Or what else is there? There's nothing to fix around the house. The servants take care of everything. And I got this whole bunch of women, but I don't know. I'm not feeling it. And so he's walking around, and he's got this nervous energy. And it says that from the roof, he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. He's like so reduced to, what do I do? That he's just looking around, and it's like, whoa, who is that? And so you can read on. He asked people, hey, who is that? And they said, somebody said to him, oh, that's Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam. Eliam was the son of Ahithophel, one of David's top advisors. And she's the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Now, they always call him Uriah the Hittite. He was a Canaanite guy who had apparently converted to Judaism. And he's now fighting for David. He's one of David's elite troops, one of David's mighty men. And right away at this point, it should have been, oh, that's Ahithophel's granddaughter. I better not go there. Let me see who's over on the other side of the roof. You know, or it's like, wait, he's married to one of my most loyal soldiers. Nope. See, David's just not used to thinking like that for some reason. He just needs something that's going to satiate this antsiness that he's living with. And so the fact that they told him that didn't matter. In verse 4, David sent messengers and took her. And she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity, and she went back home. He's like, he just did it. It's interesting that it says he laid with her, he slept with her, he had sex with her, because she had been cleansed from her impurity. It's so weird. You know, the Jews had this rule that if a woman was on her period, that you couldn't be near her or you would become unclean. So he was concerned about what the law said about that. He's not like, wait, this is wrong because you're married to my friend. You know, you're the granddaughter of my friend. This is wrong because you're married to a guy who's risking his life right now for me. It's like, okay, you're not impure. Okay, I don't see any problem. And he does this. And then it wasn't like romance. It wasn't like, wow, I love this girl so much. It's like booty call. Here you go. Now I'm back. Sorry, I don't know if that's a bad thing to say or not, but that's what it was. But now she just goes back home. And he's not feeling bad about it, apparently, at all. He doesn't give it a second thought until he gets a message from Bathsheba, and she says, I'm pregnant. And then he's like, oh, boy. I should have known. She was just cleansed from her impurity. Now it's a time when she's really ovulating. I wasn't even thinking. What was I? I was so blinded to the reality of it. And so he goes, okay, I got this. I tell people what to do, and they do it. Everyone follows my mandate. So he sends a message to Joab, and he goes, hey, send Uriah the Hittite home to tell me how the war is going. Joab didn't ask questions. Okay, sends him back. So as you read through the story, Uriah comes to David, tells him how the war is going. Yeah, we're doing good. Ammonites are just about done. And so David goes, awesome. Well, you know, go home and be with your wife, spend some time with her, and tomorrow you can go back to the battle. But Uriah is so loyal that he says, he goes and sleeps with David's servants. He doesn't even go home. And they sent the message, because a lot of people knew what had happened. This was no big secret. So they go, David, Uriah never went home. So David's like, calls him in. He goes, why didn't you go home? He says, well, for one thing, I mean, the ark of God is living in a tent. And all of your armies are out there sleeping in the dirt. Am I going to go into my comfortable house and be with my wife when my brothers are living like that? David's like, oh boy, this isn't going to be easy. Now, at this point, it would have been cool if he had thought, I am shamed. This guy is so loyal. He's such a good guy. I got to come clean. But no, instead he says, hey, have a drink. And he gets Uriah really drunk, thinking, which I don't really understand how that's supposed to make him more amorous. It usually doesn't. It makes the other people more attractive, but, you know, she was apparently already attractive. So he gets him drunk and go, hey, go home to your wife, and tomorrow you... So again, he sleeps with the servants, comes back in, and David writes a note to Joab, and he says, go into battle, and in the battle, send Uriah out in the front lines, and then pull everyone else back, let them be killed. So Joab's like, okay, doesn't ask why, maybe knew why, but he gives that message to Uriah and goes, here, give this to Joab. What happened to the man after God's heart? He's spiraling so deeply that he can hand a message to a loyal soldier to say, kill me. But he does, and Uriah delivers it faithfully, and Joab follows orders. That's what he does. And so as a result, Uriah gets killed in the battle, and Joab sends a message back. Uriah is killed. It worked. Done.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com. Or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Stories series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel, Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this has been The Balanced Word with Dave Roth. We'll have another great Bible story for you next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And yeah.